भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयम् भगवत्पाद शङ्करं लोकशङ्करं शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यम् केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अमृत्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैस्साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा योगिनः यस्यान्तन्न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः। In the Bhagavad Gita now we are starting with the fourth chapter of the Gita. We concluded the third chapter last time. This fourth chapter is called Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. It is a chapter on renunciation of action with knowledge. Therefore, the fourth chapter, the subject matter is knowledge. The third chapter, the subject matter was karma or action. The fourth chapter, the subject matter is knowledge. And Shankaracharya begins the introduction of this fourth chapter that योयम् योगः अध्यायद्वयेन उक्तः ज्ञाननिष्ठालक्षणः ससंन्यासः कर्मयोग उपायः समराइजिंग व्हाट वाज डन इन द प्रीवियस टू चैप्टर्स अंडरस्टैंड दैट द टीचिंग ऑफ लॉर्ड कृष्णा स्टार्टेड फ्रॉम द सेकंड चैप्टर ऑल्दो दिस इज फोर्थ चैप्टर टू चैप्टर्स ऑफ टीचिंग हैव गॉन बाय बिकॉज द फर्स्ट चैप्टर एसेंशियली डिस्क्राइब द कंडीशंस अंडर विच दिस डायलॉग वॉज इनिशिएटेड. It described also the state of mind of Arjuna. It described the grief of Arjuna. So first chapter was devoted to describing the background under which the teaching of Bhagavad Gita took place. Grief of Arjuna was a subject matter of the first chapter and also the first 10 verses of second chapter. From the 11th verse of second chapter, the actual teaching began. In second chapter, which is called Sankhya Yoga, Sankhya means the self here, so self-knowledge was the main subject of the second chapter. For the simple reason that it is knowledge of self alone that would be the solution to Arjuna's problem of grief. As we've been talking since last 3 days, that what causes sadness, unhappiness, grief, any kind of emotional problem is the wrong perceptions of one's own self. And a wrong perception is always brought about by the ignorance of the right thing. Just as the ignorance of the source, the rope, brings about the wrong perception in the form of snake, and so also the ignorance of the true nature of the self brings about a wrong perception of my own self. What is Arjuna's perception? That I am Arjuna, you know. What's wrong with that? Arjuna took himself to be Arjuna. What's wrong with that? That is also wrong. Because I am Arjuna, I am so and so. That is the perception of myself that is brought about on account of taking this body-mind complex to be myself. Taking the non-self to be myself on account of identification with the personality. Therefore, the idea that I am an individual being, this idea is evolved. This all we discuss. When I am one individual being, then the rest of them are other individual beings. When I am one individual being who is limited, then the sense of limitation that I feel about myself creates in me a need to become free from limitation. Therefore, every individual being is a needy being. The need being to become free from a sense of limitation. So whenever I feel a sense of limitation about myself, I am not happy at all. I am unhappy. In fact, that is when I become unhappy. That's when I become sad. When I find myself limited. When I find myself helpless. So thus, the sense of limitation, the sense of helplessness is created on account of looking upon oneself as a limited individual. And looking upon limited individual is brought about on account of not knowing that I am limitless. And then taking this limited body, mind, etc., which is my personality, taking them to myself, brings about a perception of myself that I am a limited being. Therefore, immediately there is a need on my part to become free from limitation. Thus need arises, desire arises. Now, therefore the fulfillment of desire becomes very important in me because I am a desiring or needy person. So therefore those which promise or which appear to be the means of fulfilling my desire or my need are desirable to me, and those which come in the way of fulfilling my needs are undesirable. So therefore a needy person looks upon the whole world as a desirable, undesirable. Like a doctor would look upon the world as made of patients, and the lawyer may look upon the world as made of clients, things like that, you know. That's how we have the perception. So also, I look upon the world only as consisting of two things, desirable, undesirable. Helpful, not helpful. Helpful, hurtful. So that is what is meant by calling myself Arjuna. Meaning calling myself, so it is not Arjuna's fault that he took himself to be Arjuna. But then, there is a fault involved there. That he did not know his true nature, just as everybody else also. Therefore now all the relatives, the near and dear ones, the kith and kin, who are all related to me, who are all supporting me, they all of them looked upon as dear and desirable. And anything or anyone that comes in the way of my relationship with those who are dear to me, that becomes undesirable. So all these people, the Kauravas, and Bhishma, Drona and all those are very near and dear ones to Arjuna. They are all related to him, and he derives a tremendous amount of warmth and support from them because they are relatives. And this war comes as a way of snapping that relationship. Therefore, war is undesirable. Arjuna had fought many battles, but they were not undesirable so far because they did not come in the way of his relationship to his near and dear ones. They were all wars fought elsewhere, you know. You fight battle, war in somebody else's land, therefore nothing happens to you. But when the battle is fought in your own land, that's a different matter. So therefore this war, the battle, made Arjuna extremely sad, extremely grieved for the idea of losing all the near and dear ones, and what shall I do without them? And I will be their slayer, I will be their killer, the tremendous sense of guilt. All of this made Arjuna extremely sad, grieving. But ultimately the sadness or grief is caused on account of Arjuna's perception of his own self, which is brought about by ignorance. Now the only way that the grief can be removed is by removing the cause of grief. So people are not the cause of grief. The battle is not the cause of grief. No external situation can be said to be the cause of grief. What is the cause of grief? Arjuna's perception of himself. As we've been saying in the last 3 days, that the only thing that causes unhappiness, sadness, grief in me is my perception of myself. And therefore the only way the sadness or grief can be removed is by changing that perception. Therefore, Lord Krishna's primary agenda is, or purpose is, to impart to Arjuna the knowledge of the true perception of the self. Therefore, the teaching in the second chapter begins by giving the true perception of the self. Arjuna, you are not what you take yourself to be. Na jayate mriyate va kadachit. The self is not born, self does not die, does not undergo any change, no transformation, no weapons can cleave it, water cannot wear it, fire cannot burn it, air cannot dry it, that is indestructible. Vinasham avyasyasya na kaschit kartum arhati. He is imperishable, and there is nobody who can bring about destruction or even modification or change in him. You are ever imperishable, changeless self that you are. An imperishable changeless means that there is nothing that can bring about change, nothing that can bring about any limitation in you, which means that you are the limitless self. So changeless, limitless self you already are. You take yourself to be changing, you take yourself to be limited, and therefore you want to become limitless. Recognize that you are limitless as you are. So if you know that, then all the grief arises on account of taking myself limited being, that would not be there. So therefore, this is jnana nishtha lakshana. What Lord Krishna taught Arjuna was jnanam, the knowledge of the self. Karma yoga upaya. But Lord Krishna also recognizes that in order for one to grasp this knowledge and assimilate the knowledge or abide in the knowledge, does require a certain kind of a mind, requires a prepared mind. And therefore Lord Krishna also taught a way of life which becomes a process of this preparation of mind, what we call the maturity of the mind. That's called yoga. So karma yoga upaya hai. Karma yoga becomes upaya, the means of jnana yoga. So thus in the last two chapters, second and third chapter, second chapter had both these elements. Part of second chapter was karma yoga as well. But then that idea was elaborated in the third chapter. So what Lord Krishna has taught in the previous two chapters can be said to be sankhya yoga or jnana yoga and karma yoga. Knowledge of the self, and also karma yoga, preparation of the mind for the knowledge. So that is what Lord Krishna taught. Did he teach all of this as something new? Did Lord Krishna impart a teaching which was his original teaching? He says, no, jasmin vedartha parisamapta. No, this is the teaching of Veda. So what Lord Krishna imparted in the Bhagavad Gita is nothing but the teaching of the Vedas. What do the Vedas teach? Pravritti lakshana, nivritti lakshanascha vedartha. So basically the entire Veda teaches us what we call dharma, the way of life, which is characterized by pravritti and nivritti, characterized by activity and involvement and uninvolvement. Involvement and renunciation. That's what Veda teaches. Veda teaches that you must participate also, and a time would come when you should withdraw from participation also. Therefore, life of activity means life of participation, not just doing things, but participating. Participating in the spirit of devotion, in the spirit of offering, as we discussed in the morning, that's called karma yoga. So that's what Lord Krishna said. Hey Arjuna, if you live the life of karma yoga, meaning that if you perform the karma or the actions, the spirit of yoga. What is the spirit of yoga? The spirit of yoga is the spirit of offering. And so rather than becoming a consumer, become a contributor. So consumer is the one who performs action to accumulate, to amass, aggrandize, own up, enjoy. A contributor is the one who performs actions to contribute. So Lord Krishna says, may you perform your actions not as a consumer, but as a contributor. It is to begin with, we can make some of our actions as contributors. If you cannot totally become contributors, because Swami is still, I'm not there, I still need things, okay. But then, ideally, Lord Krishna said, Arjuna, you have everything that you need. You have within you everything that you need. You think that you need the wealth and you think that you need name and fame, you don't need them. In fact, what you need is security that these things give you. That security is all to be found within yourself. And that security you will find within yourself if you become a contributor. As long as you remain a consumer, the insecurity will always persist and the security will be found when you become a contributor. That's what Lord Krishna teaches. That the whole world functions in the spirit of contributing, offering, so you also participate in the same spirit in which the rest of the world is participating. Thus actions performed, our day-to-day activities perform in the spirit of participation, which arises when I recognize how the whole universe functions with that rhythm and there how I should also be join that rhythm, then alone there can be harmony. So karma yoga is taught. Thus the spirit of contribution, participation, offering brings about, brings to manifestation that security in the wholeness which I am seeking in my life. So karma yoga enables me to gain happiness and security in a relative manner, and then with the knowledge I'll be able to gain that in absolute manner. But before I gain that fullness or freedom in a total absolute manner, it is necessary to gain that happiness or freedom in a relative manner. But freedom from what? Freedom from my own impulses, freedom from all those inhibiting factors, then inhibiting the expression of myself. As you said, expression of my goodness, the things in my own self, that anger and the greed, etc., in fact, they do not allow me to be a good person. Moment I try to be a good person, that fellow says, no, what will happen to you? Moment I stretch, I want to give something, wait a minute, what will happen to you? So moment I try to reach out, immediately something in me tells me, don't do that. They'll exploit you, they'll hurt you, you'll be hurt, something will happen to you. That insecurity within me seems to always come in the way of my becoming a generous, good person, which I want to be. And therefore Lord Krishna has become that. And then that is how you overcome all those negative instincts within you by deliberately adopting a life which is other-centered, which is contribution-centered. And that's how the inhibiting factors within me, which inhibit the manifestation and expression of my own freedom, they are slowly removed. I discover myself progressively a more and more free person, less and less needy person, more and more self-sufficient person. So therefore that freedom, self-sufficiency, that is discovered as my own self, become the preparation to ultimately know that I am totally free, I am totally complete. Thus the mind should be relatively free in order for it to know the total freedom to its nature. The mind should be relatively happy with itself. Mind should be relatively accepting itself, then to discover that I am totally acceptable. I should be pleased with myself to discover that pleasing meaning the happiness is my nature. And that has to be done. Therefore, karma yoga, living a way of life which is conducive to the manifestation of the freedom and security which my own self, I see that being manifested. So that way of life was taught. So that becomes upaya, that becomes a means. And jnana yoga becomes the end. And then also, when you gain that maturity, when you gain that inner sufficiency, you find that now you are not in need of favor. Otherwise, I am always in need of favor. A needy person is always in need of favor. I need favor from someone who can fulfill my need. When you thus essentially become free from need, as a result of this inner purification, then you need not do anything. Then you can withdraw from your action duties also. Then nivritti lakshana. Now you can lead a life of contemplation. It's continuity, it's same self-growth, but now pursued in a different way. Formerly, the self-purification or self-growth was pursued through active action, and now the same, in second stage, the same self-growth or purification is pursued by contemplation. The refinement, final touch. Like in a transistor, when I would listen to some, want to tune up to a certain station, a big knob is there, with which I tune up. Then I hear some, then yes, that's the station, you know. So you do hear the music that you want. Then you use the other knob for refinement, fine-tuning. You don't start with that fine-tuning knob right away, because God knows when you will reach, if you will reach. Fine-tuning is possible provided you hear what it is that you want, you know. You start fine-tuning when you want to listen to some song which is being played on the radio. When you hear that song, somewhat, then you fine-tune. Similarly, karma yoga enables to hear something, you know. It's not so. A karma yoga, as a result of his inner purification, hears. He recognizes the happiness within himself, the freedom within himself. So therefore, he is fairly sure that I am there. So he now needs refinement. And therefore, says, nivrutti lakshana. Now that big knob can be given up, because you cannot take up that other knob unless big knob is given up. You cannot be turning big knob and also that other knob, you know. You must stop one and then you take up the other one. So big knob in terms of pravritti or activity is given up, and the refining knob, into fine-tuning knob in terms of the nivritti contemplation is taken up. It is not a different pursuit. It is the second stage of the same pursuit. Sa sanyasa nivritti lakshana jnana yogena sankhyanam karma yogena yoginam. So for the yogis, karma, for the sankhyas, the contemplative one, the jnanam. So that's Lord Krishna also taught. We don't see those verses of renunciation, but Shankaracharya sees them, you know. So that's also interesting. Where do you find sannyasa here? People have questioned, where do you find sannyasa in Bhagavad Gita? So those who are what you call the comparative study and stuff like that, and then the, you know, but Shankaracharya find nothing but sannyasa in the whole Gita, you know. So according to Shankaracharya, Lord Krishna only teaches in sannyasa. So karma yoga also is teaching of sannyasa, the first stage of sannyasa, and then contemplative life is the second stage of sannyasa, and knowledge is the final stage of sannyasa only. Because in performing action in the spirit of worship or offering also, as we said, our own insecurities, greed, raga, likes, dislikes, have to be let go. So sannyasa is process of letting go of the inhibitions. Therefore, following the values, performing action, the spirit of offering requires me to let go of something that is, you know, my greed, small-mindedness, narrow-mindedness, selfishness. I have to let go. And so, that letting go is sannyasa. Second stage of letting go is what we call the life of contemplation. This is what Veda teaches. But that's what Veda teaches. That's what Lord Krishna taught in the first two chapters. But there remain a lot of things still remain to be taught. Is it not? Nothing more remains to be taught. Gita asuja sarvasu ayameva yoga vivakshita. Sarvasu, in the entire Gita, this is all that is intended to be taught. Although there are 18 chapters, and beautiful chapters, all give us different insights, no doubt. But the basic insight is this. That is what is sought to be taught in the entire Bhagavad Gita. So then what remains to be? Nothing. Whatever has to be taught has been already taught in the second and third chapters. Ataha parisamaptam vedasam manvana. Therefore, Lord Krishna, the teacher, thinking that he has imparted to the student what needs to be imparted, and therefore he is now concluding his teaching. Lord Krishna wants to conclude. How do you conclude? By making the student understand that, look, you have gained whatever you need to gain, and whatever has been imparted to you is authentic. The authenticity of the teaching also needs to be established. See the humility of Lord Krishna. He doesn't say, I am God and therefore you say, well, you know. No. Things become authentic only when they come from the main source book that is called Vedas. So as far as the Hindus are concerned, the Veda is a source book. Bhagavad Gita will become source book because it adheres to Veda. Anything becomes authentic because it authenticity ultimately is derived from the Vedas. Therefore, Lord Krishna wants to clarify that, look, this teaching that I have imparted to you is not something new. It is not a figment of my imagination. I am not starting something new, sampradaya or a new tradition or something like that. I am not starting anything new. See, Lord Krishna had no agenda of his own, nor Shankaracharya started a new tradition, you see. They don't. Otherwise, perhaps his name would be more well known, you know, because when you start a new thing, then it goes by your name, then you will become more well known. But they did not have that agenda. So all these sages and all the teachers, nobody knows their names also. Some of the names we know, but otherwise nobody knows their names. Because that did not matter. But Lord Krishna wants to make Arjuna understand that this is authentic teaching because it is coming down from the tradition, meaning that Lord Krishna himself is a part of tradition, and what is imparted to Arjuna also is traditional teaching, thereby establishing the authenticity of what Lord Krishna has taught Arjuna. Because we can put our trust in something that is authentic. Even drugs also, spurious drugs can be there. Therefore, you want to make sure, is this all right? You look at the labels and things like that and see where it is coming from. We can put trust when it is authentic. And therefore, we can put the trust in the teaching, in the words of Lord Krishna, only when they are authentic. And they are authentic if they are derived from an authentic source. That means they are derived from the Vedas. That means that is a tradition that is coming down from the time beginningless. So therefore, Lord Krishna wants to conclude his teaching by describing what we call tradition. Samaptam Veda Sammanvanaha. Thinking that whatever is to be taught, the essence of Veda has already been taught to Arjuna. Meaning Arjuna has everything that he needs in order to achieve the ultimate goal. Vamshakathanena tam stauti Bhagavan, Shri Bhagavan. Lord Krishna praises the very teaching that is imparted. How can you praise something that you have done? That doesn't sound good, right? Lord Krishna praises the very teaching that is imparted. How does he praise? Not by saying how wonderful I am, or what wonderful ideas I have given you, but he praises by saying, what is the wonderful source from which the teaching comes? So the teaching is praised by praising the source from where it comes. I am not the source. That is the source. That's what they say. And when great people say something, what they say also is great. Therefore the greatness of what is said is established by establishing greatness of who said it. So this is how Lord Krishna wants to establish a greatness and authenticity of the teaching by telling us the source, by telling us the tradition. Who are the great people who are involved in this tradition? We want to know that. Who are the people? So who was your father? Who is your guru? Who is his guru? No. What is it? You know? And then we will see, consider. Before giving our daughter to anybody, who is your father? Who is your mother? What did this tradition? What did they do? We want to know. Where is the source? Girl is all right, boy is okay. But still, where does he come from? What is his lineage? What is the culture? What is the upbringing? Looks are all right, but that's not everything, you know. So, what is inside also is important. And therefore, this Lord Krishna here, Vamshakathayana, he tells us the lineage. Vamsha means lineage. So, by lineage, as to who were those who were involved in this sampradaya, in this parampara, in this lineage. And that's how They were great people. Therefore the teaching is great. That is how the teaching is praised. You know? So that is how Lord Krishna wants to now summarize or conclude the teaching with that, the first verse of the fourth chapter. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Imam Vivasvate Yogam. Proktavanahamavyayam. Vivasvan Manave Praha. Manurikshvakave Braveed. Imam Avyayam Yogam Aham Vivasvate Proktavan. This Avyayam Yogam, this imperishable yoga, immortal yoga. This yoga is this teaching here. So that teaching is immortal. Why is it immortal? Because the source is immortal. Veda is thought to be immortal. There is no beginning and no end, and therefore the source being immortal, the teaching also is the principles. What is being taught are the realities of life. What Veda teaches is the basic reality of life. That's what Bhagavad Gita teaches. What is the reality of myself? What's the reality of the world? So that's what is taught. And that also happens to be immortal. So the subject matter also is immortality. And the source from where it is coming also is immortal. Because we look upon Veda as revealed text and not as written text. And therefore the Vedas are revealed. Revealed to whom? Revealed to the sages. So not written by the sages, but then revealed to the sages. So when those sages, on account of their own penance, on account of the capacities that they acquire in their own mind, were able to tune up to the available teaching, that's how they received it. Like a transistor tunes up to the broadcasting station, its wavelength and frequency. So not that transistor produces something new, it simply transmits what is there. And so also the rishis, the sages are called seers. We look upon them as transistors, that's all. The music comes from there, from the original broadcasting station, which is God. And through them, through the sages, we get this. Therefore, it has no beginning. It's not composed. It's not written. If it is written by even sages, then also we would question. Because how, you know, because he's after all a human being. And human intellect is bound to have limitations, regardless of how great you are. Still, there are bound to be limitations. However great Newton is, but when he makes two cages for the cats, two, you know, opening, he makes one small and one big, you know. So, big one, big opening with a big cat, small opening with a small cat, you know. However great a person is, there is always going to be some limitation. And therefore, if it is a composition or, you know, by a human being, then the limitation of human mind will be reflected. But this is not written or composed by any human beings, this is revealed. Human beings are just a medium. Therefore, the source is immortal. What is taught is immortality. In both ways, this teaching is called immortal yoga, because the subject matter itself, who is immortal. The result also immortal. As a result, you become liberated free, once and for all. You gain the freedom, which now, with bondage, never to come back. Therefore, the result also is imperishable, because you are liberated once and for all. So, liberated forever. So, result also is imperishable. The subject matter also is imperishable. The source from where the knowledge comes also is imperishable. From all this standpoint, Lord Krishna calls this teaching the yoga, immortal yoga. This is what Imam Ahamavyam Praha, this is what I have said. To whom? Vivasvate. I taught this yoga to Vivasvan. Lord Krishna makes a very interesting statement. I taught this to Vivaswan. Who is Vivaswan? The sun god. So one of the names of sun, S-U-N sun, is Vivaswan. He is a effulgent lord. In fact, he symbolizes what we call the Hiranyagarbha. Symbolizes what we call the creator, Brahma. So the first manifestation of Lord is Hiranyagarbha. It's all light, all knowledge, the totality of all subtle bodies. It's called Hiranyagarbha. And that's what Vivaswan is. That's what sun is. So first this knowledge is imparted to sun, to Vivaswan, to Hiranyagarbha, to Brahmaji. So the Puranas describe how this knowledge was first imparted to Brahma, the creator. Yo Brahmanam vidadhati purvam, yo vaivedam sya prahinoti tasmai. Yo Brahmanam vidadhati purvam, one who brings Brahma, the creator, into being first. Yo vaivedam sya prahinoti tasmai, and one who imparts the Vedas to him. And therefore in the Puranas we hear this, read these stories as to how Brahmaji appeared in the lotus which emerged from the navel of Lord Narayana, and then Lord Narayana appears before him and imparts the teaching of Vedas. And with that, Brahmaji then creates. So Brahmaji is the first student of Narayanam Padma Bhavam Vasishtham. So Narayana is the original, first teacher. Who is the first teacher? The first teacher has to be God. Every teacher is also a disciple. Every teacher must have a teacher. His teacher also must have a teacher. His teacher also must have a teacher. So who can be the first teacher? The first teacher must be necessarily one who is a teacher and not a student. The first father must be one who is father and not son. The first cause must be one which is cause and not an effect. Otherwise we find in our day-to-day life, every cause is also an effect. Clay is the cause of the pot, but effect of earth. Every cause also is an effect. What's the first cause? Which is cause and not an effect. Uncaused cause. Every father is also a son. Who can be first father? Who is father, but not son. Unfathered father. Every teacher is a disciple. Who is the first teacher? One is teacher, but not a disciple. Untaught teacher. There is Narayana. You call him Dakshinamurti, Sadashiva Samarambham, Narayana Samarambham, whatever. Some people read the verse like that. Narayana Samarambham, Shankaracharya Madhyamam, Sadashiva Samarambham, Ramanuja Madhyamam, they will also insert other names, but whatever. So Lord Krishna says, I, Narayana, first imparted this knowledge to Brahma the creator. And Brahma creates. Who did Brahma impart this knowledge to? Vivaswan, Manave Praha. Manu is the first being. We are all called the children of Manu, though we are called Manava. So Manu is the first being. So Brahmaji or Vivaswan imparted the teaching to his son, which is, who is Manu? Manu Ikshvakava Bravir. Manu imparted the teaching to his son Ikshvaku, who was the first king. So Ikshvaku is the first king in the solar dynasty. And Lord Rama also came in that dynasty, but Ikshvaku is the first king in the solar dynasty, the first Kshatriya king. So this is how Lord Krishna says that this lineage began from Lord Narayana himself to Brahma and to Manu to Ikshvaku. All great people. You may not know these names, but those Arjuna used to know. So now we don't know who is Ikshvaku. We don't know that. So that it doesn't do anything to us. When you hear that name, nothing happens. Okay. But if you are brought up in that tradition, then you know how great Ikshvaku was. You know how great Manu was. We mean Manu also learned this. You know, Ikshvaku also did. Then it must be great. Because these great people are involved. So these great people in fact dedicated themselves to the pursuit of knowledge and they received the knowledge that shows that knowledge was valuable. Otherwise, why should Manu, why should Ikshvaku, why should they have to take trouble to gain the knowledge? So when we are told the story that Indra and Virochana went to Prajapati and before Prajapati could impart them any upadesha or teaching, they had to perform the penance for 32 years. So those days the teachers were not very eager to right away push and shower the thing on you. So Indra is a god of devatas and Virochana is god of all the asuras, demons. These great people go and live there in all humility and penance and austerity for 32 years. Then the teacher invites them, what can I do for you? So we want to learn, know about the self. Okay, the teaching is imparted. Both of them go away without quite understanding what the teacher says. As Virochana went away, he thought he understood it, and that's what he told his people. So then we have these demons, all the Virochana cult. But Indra, as he was walking back, he contemplated. He says, my understanding doesn't seem to be right. And so he came back. And he said, this is what I understood, but doesn't seem to be right. All right, another 32 years. At the end of it, he's again called. Another second level of teaching is imparted. At that time, Indra thought that I understood. He went back. But while walking back, he's again thinking, but my understanding doesn't seem to be quite adequate. Comes back, reports, another 32 years. Third time the teaching is imparted. Indra thought he understood. Goes back, again comes back, again reports. This time 5 years. Can you imagine somebody telling you, 5 years in 5 days, suppose they are told. So we'll find some other place, you know. But 101 years? So Indra, the king of gods, performed penance. He lived in life ascetic. Not that he had any luxuries there, lived life ascetic. Here before we come to Gurukul, do you have air conditioner there? What is the food that you go? How many times? What kind of breakfast? What is what? We make sure that everything is okay. And this management here also is very obliging. That no, everybody should feel at home, better than home. The teachers in the past did not think so. Life of austerity. So king of heavens lived 101 years. Then when you hear that, oh, it was really valuable. Why should Indra, who had everything, king of heavens, everything, all you can think of, even then, he went all the way and he lived life of austerity for 101 years. This was really valuable. That's how the value of knowledge is sought to be conveyed. So when great people are involved, Brahma Devanam Prasamasam Bhabhuva Vishvasya Karta Bhuvanasya Gopta Sat Brahma Vidyam Sar Vidya Pratishtam Atharvaya Jyeshtha Putraya Praha. So Mundakopanishad says that Brahma imparted this knowledge to Atharva, and then this. So when you hear the names of these great sages, Atharvaneya Pravededa Brahma Atharvatam Provachangre, then Angira was there, Bharadvaj was there, Angirasa was there, and so forth. So such great sages are involved. They dedicated their life in pursuit of his knowledge. It must be valuable. So that is how the knowledge is praised, by mentioning or recounting who are the great people who are involved in this tradition. So the Lord Krishna says that I imparted this teaching to Vivaswan, who in turn imparted his son Manu, who in turn imparted to his son Ikshvaku, and so forth it went on. That's what he said in the second verse. And second verse says, Evam parampara praptam Imam Rajarshayo Viduhu Sakale Neha Mahata Yogo Nashtah Parantapa. Evam parampara prapta, thus transmitted in succession. Succession from father to the son, of teacher to disciple. So those days the succession was this way. Very often the teacher also was father and the disciple was also son. They think that's an ideal combination. So, na putraya na shishyaya deyam. This knowledge should not be imparted to one who is not your son or your disciple. So, ideally, if son and disciple both are one, that's great, because the dearest son is always very dear. And that one who is dear to your heart becomes a disciple, then this disciple also is very dear. And to the one who is very dear to you, you'll always impart the very best. And thus, this parampara, that is how, thus transmitted in succession from father to son, Rajarshayo Viduhu. This yoga remained known to Rajarshis, the royal sages. In short, Lord Krishna says that this knowledge, which is what we call Brahma Vidya, the knowledge of Brahman, or knowledge of the Self. So this knowledge, the great or secret, most valuable knowledge, those days was transmitted among the royal sages, meaning that it remained with the Kshatriya kings. You know, the four castes are the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. The Brahmana is supposed to be the most evolved, and Kshatriya is less in evolution. It's evolution that the castes are there. But Lord Krishna says that the knowledge was transmitted in the lineage of Kshatriyas. Not ordinary Kshatriya kings, but Rajarshi. So those Kshatriya kings were a combination of Brahmana and Kshatriya. So if Brahmana is recognized by his subtlety of perception, by his capacity to be able to understand and grasp and retain the subtle ideas of scriptures, that is a Brahmana. And Kshatriya is usually known by his muscle power and by his selflessness. So Kshatriya is the one who possesses the strength, both the muscular strength as well as the moral strength. A Kshatriya is the one, and particularly Kshatriya king is the one, who himself lives a life of dharma or righteousness and sets an example for all the subjects. So therefore, if you have a Kshatriya king who has all the might, at the same time all the subtlety, that would be an ideal person. So Brahmana has all the subtlety, doesn't have the might, and therefore he may not be able to influence the people. The Kshatriya can influence the people because he has power and the might, but may not have subtlety. In that case also influence may not be very desirable. But here is a royal sage who possesses the subtlety of the mind as well as the might of the strength he possesses. Therefore, this knowledge is to be in the tradition of the royal sages. Evam parampara praptam imam yogam rajarshayo viduhu. Thus, these rajarshis, the royal sages, so Raja and Rishi is called Rajarshi. Raja is a king, Rishi is a sage. So Rishi is the sage, one who has the subtlety of the mind, as we said, to understand and grasp the meanings, subtle meanings. And Raja is the one who has the power or the might. Why did you tell them and not to somebody else? You can ask this question, how come, Lord, you selected these royal sages? Because they are the protectors. Jagat paripalayitrunam kshatriyanam baladhanaya. In order to impart the strength of the kshatriyas. So the kshatriya kings have a might of one kind. That is the muscular strength. But really they need another kind of strength, the strength of character. So the might of the power becomes a blessing only when it is accompanied with the inner strength. Otherwise the same power can become a curse. Demons are also very powerful, but without that inner strength, therefore their power became a curse to the people. So you want power or might, all right, at the same time it must become a benevolent power and not a cursing power. Therefore, Lord Krishna says that this knowledge was imparted to Kshatriyas, because his knowledge gives strength. The knowledge of one's own purity, knowledge of one's own freedom, knowledge of one's own wholeness and fullness gives you strength, because that knowledge releases you from all small-mindedness. What is the weakness is nothing but the small-mindedness, the narrow-mindedness, the selfishness. That is the weakness. That's what brings about all the insecurity. And that is what, as I said makes me a weak person. So that's what prevents me from really reaching out. And therefore, Lord Krishna says that those who possess that physical strength, outer strength, were imparted his knowledge so that they have the inner strength, in which case the strength of the might will become a blessing, then it will really protect the rest of these subjects. So catch the right person, it will then take care, you know. And so, tena yoga balena yuktaha samarthaha bhavanti brahma parirakshitam. So when the kshatriyas are thus possessed of the pure strength, Then they will do their duty of protecting the Brahmanas. So we know in the olden days how the Brahmanas, that is learned people, the sages, were the advisors and the gurus of the Kshatriya kings. So when the Kshatriya himself has that purity and the strength, then he'll be able to take care of the Brahmanas, protect them. Brahmanas require to be protected. Kshatriyas are those who have the capacity to protect. But Brahmanas are those who need to be protected. So Brahmanas are those people, means people who are sattvic people. People who are very gentle, very learned, pure. But they don't have the muscular power. They don't have the killer instinct. They don't have the fighting spirit. They cannot fight. So a non-violent person also becomes very gentle, and therefore your capacity to fight also goes down. So Brahmanas are very gentle people, and therefore they need to be protected. Who can protect them? Kshatriyas. What kind of Kshatriyas will protect them? Kshatriyas who have value for the knowledge, who have value for the wisdom, who have value for purity, who recognize the value of these people. Therefore it is said here that this knowledge, Brahma Vidya, was first imparted to the royal sages, who then would become capable of truly protecting the Brahmanas. Brahma Kshatriya Paripalite Jagat Paripalitam Alam. Then you take care of Brahmana and Kshatriya, and the rest of the society is taken care of, because the rest depend upon this. The Vaishya, that means business and trading people and producers and distributors, depend upon proper justice, proper just rule. The policies must be all right, you know, otherwise how can the business people function? So there must be fairness, there must be nyaya, you know. So that's what the Kshatriyas provide, the right atmosphere then to the rest of the people. To Brahmanas, Vaishyas and Shudras. When the right atmosphere is provided, they all flourish. And that's how the whole society is protected, whole society flourishes, every individual also flourishes. That is why this knowledge was imparted to them. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo viduhu. So that's how the royal kings knew that, royal sages knew that. Then what happened? Sakarene hamata yogo nashtah parantapa. However, a long time elapsed from then and now. And this time is funny, you know, dharma khrasakarena. The time has a tendency to slowly bring about decay, including decay in dharma of the righteousness. If we just let things go on and slowly righteousness or dharma also is something that will decay. Because dharma or righteousness requires discipline, requires self-control. And that requires, so people who have self-control, people who have discipline, they are the people who can follow dharma, otherwise you cannot. I mean all the best values, but then I don't, Swamiji, you know, this is my weakness. This is my weakness. When I see this, then I can't control. Then one cannot follow dharma. So here Lord Krishna says that a long time elapsed between then and now. And therefore, there were not what we call the fit students or fit adhikaris, the right people were not there for this knowledge to be communicated, to be contained. Everything requires a right container, you know. I don't know if you have heard or not, but it is said that milk of a female lioness, requires a golden vessel. That's what they said. Otherwise that milk will penetrate through any other vessel. You require a golden vessel to receive and contain the milk of a lioness. So also you require a golden vessel to receive this milk of Brahma Vidya. Golden vessel is required. a golden mind is required. You require people having samadhi satka sampatti, samadhi calmness of the mind, damaha the calmness of the sense organs, titiksha the power to forbearance. So uparati, in mind that is abiding in itself. Shraddha, one who has the trust, faith. This is what you require. Samodamastapasyaujam kshantirajam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhavajam. So that's the brahmana, whoever he is, who possesses shamaha, damaha, tapaha, austerity, saucham, purity, shanti, forgiveness, arjavam, straightforwardness, honesty, jnanam, vijnanam astikyam, one who is learned in the scriptures, vijnanam, one who lives a life in keeping with that. When you have people like that, then they are the fit receptacles for receiving this knowledge. But unfortunately, what happens is because of the prosperity, the capacity of the people to be able to live a life of austerity, it decreases. When comforts are there, when prosperity is there, comforts are there, everything easy and available, then our capacity to exert naturally goes away. So when things are easily available, your tendency, you know, to all consume them, because they are there, Swamiji. Otherwise I won't do, but it's there. Air conditioner is there, so I switch on. So now I lose my capacity to be comfortable in any other temperature, only 70 degrees, that's all. 80 degrees, I become uncomfortable. So thus, when everything is comfortable, everything is provided for, when prosperity is there, then comfort is there, and then people take things for granted. The discipline goes away, the capacity to exert goes away, the capacity to suffer goes away, and that's why we become loose, and that's why the capacity to follow dharma, which requires discipline and self-control, that capacity also goes, and therefore honesty slowly goes. And you find slowly the deterioration in values. In all societies, wherever prosperity is there, where people become, it doesn't have to, but people become extrovert, because money is such, comfort is such, it will influence. And therefore the influence that our culture has will not be able to match with the influence that the comfort has. And with the TV has, with all those entertainment things have. So they can easily invoke the bhogi in me. The bhogi is what? The one who is enjoyer. And so, that is easy to invoke. The discipline is difficult to invoke. Enjoyment is easy to invoke. And that is how, slowly not only we enjoy, but we indulge. So indulgence increases. I use my mind to justify my indulgence. And person becomes weaker, the inner strength, weaker and weaker. So that's what Lord Krishna has happened, as a result of which, now this parampara, that means his lineage, that sort of disappeared, almost disappeared, because they were not qualified people to receive and communicate this knowledge. Sakalene hamata yogo nastav parantapa. Here, in this world, mahata kalena, on account of a long time that elapsed, and the time has the effect of decaying things, including decaying the capacity of the people, and therefore, he parantapa yoga nashtaha. Arjuna is called parantapa. Paran shatrun tapayati di parantapa. The one who scorches his enemy is called parantapa. But Arjuna is called parantapa because he is a scorcher of inner enemies. So one with the capacity to scorch the inner enemies of likes and dislikes is called parantapa. So you are qualified, Lord Krishna says, that you are all right. But we didn't have those people, therefore, this suffered a break, there was a break in the lineage. And that being the case, so, says Lord Krishna in third verse, Sa eva yam maya tedya yoga prokta puratanaha bhakto sime sakha cheti
bhakto sime sakha cheti
rahasyam yetad uttamam
rahasyam yetad uttamam
sa eva ayam yo puratana yoga mayate adya proktah. That very same ancient yoga, Arjuna, has been imparted to you by me. Arjuna may think that, what have you given me? Is it the same thing? But Arjuna, what it is that I imparted to Vivasvan in the beginning of the creation, and which was coming down in the parampara of the Rajasis, that very same knowledge has been imparted to you. Sa eva, that very same, ayam yo parayan puratana yoga. This ancient yoga, the immortal yoga, has been imparted to you. Anadi guru paramparagataha yoga. That yoga, the knowledge that is coming down to us from the time beginningless, from the lineage of teacher to the student. That is what? Why did you teach me? Because without that teaching, one cannot accomplish the goal of the life. Purushartha. Purushai archate. What it is that a human being desires. When we recognize what it is that we desire, we find that we desire unconditional freedom, unconditional happiness. That's what we desire. Everything in the world is conditional. So no conditional thing can give you unconditional happiness. It is this knowledge that can give you unconditional happiness. By making you recognize that unconditional happiness that you're seeking is your own self. So therefore, it's only with the knowledge that purushartha, that human being can gain satisfaction in their life, fulfillment in life, because Lord has created the universe, He wants to see people happy. He finds people are miserable. In spite of everything that they have, they are miserable because they keep on running after pillar to post. That's all, from one end to the other, and not finding what they want. So it is this knowledge that alone can quench that thirst of whatever it is that the human being is seeking, and dhanyoham, krutakrityoham, then he can say, I am blessed, I am krutakrityoham, as Viveka Chudamani said, dhanyoham, krutakrityoham, I am dhanya, I am blessed, krutakritya, whatever needs to be done has been done, whatever needs to be accomplished has been accomplished in my life. That is called the purushartha. That is when the life is fulfilled. So fulfillment of life cannot be unless this knowledge is there. For here, Arjuna, this knowledge has been imparted to you by me. How come me and not somebody else? That anyasmai kasmai chit. This knowledge was imparted by Lord Krishna to Arjuna. I guess he must have waited for this time to come. Lord Krishna always had this knowledge. But I guess Lord Krishna was waiting for a fit student and a fit frame of mind. Arjuna also was with him, but then he waited for this time and this condition to occur when Arjuna was ready to receive the knowledge. Arjuna himself was a kshatriya, a rajarshi, a kshatriya, and also sage because of this knowledge, the very right person, and samartha, meaning the one who was powerful, or strong, and also well recognized. Therefore, through him then, this knowledge will receive he wants the knowledge to be spread, so that will happen. How come you impart the knowledge to me? So Lord Krishna says, bhakto sime sakha chaiti. Because you are my devotee and you are my friend, therefore a special favor has been done to you. Favoritism is there, you know, because Arjuna is a friend of Lord Krishna. Although he may have many friends, but Arjuna was chosen because bhakta, he is a devotee also. Bhakta. So, bhakta is the one who is in fact, who is surrendered to the Lord. That's what Arjuna said. Shishyasteham, shishyasteham, sadhimam, tvam parpanam, I am surrendered to you. So, sharanagata. So, Arjuna, in as much as you are my bhakta, you are sharanagata. You have surrendered yourself to me. At the same time, sakha, very dear to me. So, two things are there. The disciple is very dear to the teacher, and on the part of the disciple, he has surrendered himself to the teacher. So something is required on both the sides. From the standpoint of the student, he is bhakta, sharanagata, surrendered to the teacher. On the part of the teacher, his sakha, his friend, very dear. Therefore the teaching is imparted out of love. Only when love is there, no other agenda will be there. Otherwise agenda will be there. The point is that if the ideal relationship is not established, then some agenda will always remain. Either on the part of the teacher or on the part of the student also. So, the student just wants knowledge and nothing else. No, that's not an ordinary thing. Or the teacher just wants to impart knowledge, has no other, you know, is seeking no other favor. But if pure love is not there, then even in the process of teaching something, some favor will be there, you know, who is coming from where, what is what, you know, something will be there, some calculation can be there. If anything other than pure love is a motivating factor. So Lord Krishna says this teaching is imparted to Arjuna on this from out of pure love because my friend. And Arjuna is seeking this knowledge from Lord Krishna with total trust that Sharana. What is Sharanagata? One who is surrendered. When can you surrender? When you have total trust? When you know that you are safe? When you know that someone is taking care of you? And so, then that trust is there, then you feel safety. You feel total acceptance. You feel totally comfortable. So when the student is listening from the teacher, with this frame of mind, when there is trust, when there is a feeling of acceptance, when the student feels totally comfortable, not being judged, not being exploited, not anything else, then that's the right frame of mind to understand and receive what is being said. And as part of the teacher also, when there is no other agenda other than the well-being of the student, the only agenda the teacher has is the well-being of the student, which Lord Krishna himself says in more than one place in Bhagavad Gita. And so, it is ayatteham priyamanaya vakshyami hitakamyaya. Because I am so dear to you, you are so dear to me, therefore hitakamyaya, as prompted by the desire for your being, I am telling you this. So teacher's only agenda is the well-being of the student. And the student on his turn, her, is surrender, having total faith or the trust. That's an ideal atmosphere for the communication. This teaching requires that. Other teaching may not require. If one learn physics, chemistry, mathematics, the students may not have that. They go there because, Swami, you know how many dollars we're paying per class? You know? And what's the professor getting? For every class, that's how they look at the professor, as if somebody is a wage earner. So, that is all right. But here that won't work. Here what is required is this, bhakto sime sakha cheti. Since Arjuna, this ideal atmosphere, therefore, this yoga, this knowledge may be imparted to you by me today. Because rahasyam hetu duttamam, this is in fact the ultimate secret. And the secret cannot be opened before anybody. Don't do that. Don't open your secrets before just anybody. And don't show your precious things to anybody. Precious things are always shown to precious people. You place things in your what they call showcase. People are showcases. That's all right. For those who come and go. But then there is a room inside where there are special things. Then there is a cupboard inside where there are special things. Then there is a safe inside. Yes, special things. And that you show to khasam khas, special people. And so, this is hetaduttamam, rahasyam hetaduttamam. This is a very great secret. And therefore, it can only be revealed to someone like you. Therefore, this has been imparted to you. Thus, in these three verses, Lord Krishna summarizes the teaching by telling us what the lineage is, that this is authentic teaching, and to make Arjuna also contented that you have received the same authentic teaching has been given to you. So, if Arjuna did not ask the question, Bhagavad Gita would have concluded here. But Arjuna happens to ask a question, therefore, Gita continues, which we'll see next time. Yeah. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyave. Om Shanti 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 Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Badarayanam
sutra bhashya krutau vande bhagavantau punah punah ishvaro guru ratmeti murti bheda vibhagine vyomavad vyapta dehaya dakshinamurtaye namah. Om shanti 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 hari om.